Okay. Thank you all for joining us today. My name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. A few reminders before we get started. All upcoming professional development offerings are available on our webpage under nysrti.org, and we're adding things all the time, so please check that out. A copy of today's PowerPoint is also available on our webpage under webinars and then today's webinar title. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we will post a link to a brief evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we very much appreciate the feedback. We are very pleased to have back with us Dr. Catherine Stahl to present our Strand 14 series, the second one, using an assessment audit to create the title of the strand is using an assessment audit to create a lean and efficient RTI assessment system for grades 3 through 6. Today's topic is grades 3 through 6 conducting the audit, who does what and why. Dr. Stahl is a clinical associate professor of literacy in New York University. She studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic. For over 25 years, Stahl taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. Dr. Stahl has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in reading education from the University of Georgia in 2003. At this time, it is my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Molly, and thank all of you for joining us today. So I hope that you do have on hand the copy of the presentation as well as the a copy of the audit. It would make it a little easier if you haven't downloaded that yet. It might make it a little easier for you to see. Certainly, it'll be showing up on the screen and it's on the slides. But some of the print is sort of small, so if you want to go ahead and get that on hand as we begin. So our agenda for today is to walk through the actual assessment audit form, and we will actually do some examples so that you can have that experience yourselves before actually implementing it in your schools. We will also talk about how to ensure inclusiveness and comprehensiveness to make sure that all voices are heard in your school and that there is a discussion around the assessments that people use and why they use them, as well as ensuring that everyone has a chance to participate, because a very important part of RTI is to eliminate those silos that we tend to work in where one hand doesn't really know what the left hand is doing. And this will give us a chance today to really get the big picture before we actually conduct the audit process in each of our areas. So as always, the first thing I'd like to know is who we have joining us today. And so if you could indicate your primary role, that would be very helpful to me in targeting our conversation. So if you can just go ahead and click on what role is your primary role in your school. I think we still have a few more people. Maybe those people are actually busy copying. So it looks like we have some interventionists district people, and then one other person. Okay, Molly, and so now if we can go to the next slide. The next slide is the slide in which I'd like you to tell me what grade levels you work with. Whether, you know, it looks like many of you might be working with all the grade levels, or some of you, you know, some of the literacy interventionists might just be working with one or two. Oh, okay. Okay, so that looks great. Yes, as I expected. All right, so most of all the information that we're going to be addressing today, as you proceed through your audit process, everything that we'll be talking about today, all of the resources, the forms, and information can all be accessed on our New York State RTI website. And there are also some wonderful examples there that I'll be referencing a little later in our presentation. And then also in the reading assessment in an RTI framework, all of the information is provided in a very detailed way. And in particular, some of what we're going to be talking about today that's specific to tests in grades 3 through 6 that your schools are either using now or may want to look at using as you get down the road in this process and are beginning the selection process, those are all fully explained in the reading assessment in an RTI framework book. Now, last time that we met, we talked about the purpose of the audit. And we said that certainly one of the key things is for us to streamline and systematize the assessment process. You know, so often we are really over-testing our children, and that testing may be eating up some of our instructional time. We also talked about how we communicate, you know, that part of the audit process is to communicate who is doing what and how they're doing it. Talking about what each party really values in terms of assessment, and then evaluating if the efforts that we are investing, the time invested, the materials and the resources invested, both personal and financial, really, with all of this investment, is our process valid and reliable? Are the results we're getting really worth all this investment? Then we also want to talk about how we can get the information we need about our students' literacy performance more effectively and efficiently. And finally, are our assessments serving us, or are we a servant to testing in ways that compromise that instructional time and quality? And primarily today, we will be talking about this, these three areas: who is doing what and how, and the communication of that. Every person should have a voice in talking about what they're doing. But more important, these conversations, both at the grade level and at the school level, are very important because people use assessments that they value. And so it's very important to get those hidden reasons, bring that to the surface, to have that kind of transparency. Because if we just use a top-down model as administrators trying to advocate what we know is best, then often people will continue to do what they're doing behind closed doors or take shortcuts in doing what we may be recommending system-wide. And we're also going to look at some of the things that, you know, and some of the practices that we're doing that may be, you know, perhaps the same test administered in more standardized ways or the recorded in more value, in more also more standardized ways could increase the validity and reliability of existing assessments. And so those three areas are going to be our focus today. Now, the next thing I would like you to do is go ahead and let's take a look at this audit form. And we are going to be actually going through some explicit examples in our audit process. And this is the kind of audit process that you will be going through at each grade level. So first, we would start this at the grade level. And so we're going to look at some specific assessments that might be likely to be used in grades 3 through 6 to assess the important literacy skills at that developmental age level. So, for example, first of all, we within the state of New York, we all are looking at the New York State ELA. And certainly while that is an outcome-based summative measure, there is no doubt that we use that in also decision-making around who is requiring some intervention. So we do want to put that on our list. And so if we look at that, the purpose for that in some of our cases, as I said, you know, that even though it's designed as an outcome measure, we do, when it in that fall, when we are looking at who is going to need some intervention, we are looking at that previous year's ELA test results to see who struggled in the last in their previous year's test. And so this test, however, is primarily a comprehension test. Even though there are written responses to it, it is not really an opportunity to look at the writing process. It is simply that those writing activities are in service to communicating what a student understands about a piece of text. It is administered once a year, and it is, we certainly have training and fidelity checks by having people monitor in our classrooms and some of the other kinds of monitoring systems that are in place to ensure that our New York State ELA is given according to regulations. Another test that is commonly used in many schools around the state in these grade levels is the STAR test. Many schools are using this as screening with our APPR. That's another reason why this is very popular in our state. And so it is used for screening. And it also, in many schools, may be used, different pieces of it may also be used for progress monitoring. This is a way to gauge some of the things that this test, and STAR is an example of a test that tests many of our constructs. So it's a way to gauge reading fluency. It is also gauging comprehension. And it is given at a minimum for screening purposes, fall, winter, and spring. And some schools may be using it to identify whether gains are being made, and so some schools may be using it monthly as a progress monitoring tool. And again, this would vary by school. And in terms of training, typically there is some initial training when this has been adopted. But I think one of the things a school would want to look at related to STAR is, was the training provided when we bought the program, or is training provided annually so that we are sure that any new employees that we have are being trained in the STAR system? And I think that's a question that we do need to ask and that we need to note in this box in terms of training, whether we really are doing an adequate job, and also whether there are some boosters being provided. And by boosters, I mean, are there sessions, training sessions, intermittently to make sure that we are not having what Maury Clay liked to call drift, that we are really drifting from the required and mandated ways of and standardized ways of administering this, but also interpreting the results and how the results are intended to be used. Now, the next one I would like you to do. So I know in fourth grade, even though DIBLES in most cases may only be given, the oral reading fluency may only be given in late first grade and second grade, some schools may be using ORF because it is a powerful screening tool to see whether fluency is in place. So what I would like you to do now is I would like you to go ahead and complete the DIBLES ORF assessment. On your sheet, on your own personal sheet, and how would you complete this if your school was using it? And so I'll give you a minute or so to do that. And I have a question here of whether STAR can be used to replace DIBLES. I would suggest that I would hate to be a promoter for any company's individual test in terms of making decisions about replacement. So I would certainly recommend, and also these tests are being modified each year with some of the new adaptive qualities. And so I can't really tell you whether one test can replace another. That's actually what your school would be doing in this investigative kind of process. You would be looking at what is STAR's most up-to-date 2016 qualities, and then even the DIBLS. I know that the DIBLS is being updated, and so I think it all depends on how you're planning on using these tests. But I think that with STAR as a computer-based test, I don't think you're not actually having children read aloud to you with STAR as DIBLS is. So it's a different functionality. And so, those are good things that your group is going to be discussing and investigating. So now if we look at the slide, you don't have this slide. This is the slide with the answer sheet. I would say even in fourth grade, you can use DIBLS oral reading fluency as a screening measure for fluency, and also as a progress monitoring tool, because many children in fourth grade still are not achieving that oral reading fluency, their oral reading fluency benchmarks. And the level of automaticity and accuracy that is needed for rich comprehension. And so sometimes, and I would say very commonly, the problem when we see on an ELA test, we see that a child is having a low performance score on the ELA or a low performance score on STAR, we need to discriminate. Why is it that that child is not able to comprehend? Is it a purely comprehension problem, or is it a word recognition problem? And if it's a word recognition problem, then the first pathway where that shows up is in their connected text reading. And here is another test that we, a couple more tests that we might look at. So, for example, something like the Gates-McGinnity reading test, some of the charter schools are still administering the Gates-McGinnity test. It's a standardized test. It is typically used also by many schools that are charter schools as an outcome-based measure, but it can be used as a screening task as well because of the good normed and standardized features of administration. And so it really gives you a very reliable and valid assessment of a child's reading. And I'm going to look at my sheet with a bigger print. And this has opportunities to assess depending. And now fourth grade, I imagine it's only conceptual vocabulary and comprehension are tested in the fourth grade level. But there are subtests in some of the primary grades that do enable the Gates-McGinnity to test the phonological awareness and the and different word recognition skills. The FRI list is something that I would recommend that you that many people might be using in the fourth grade. I would suspect that by fourth grade you're no longer using the Dolch list as a gauge of high frequency words. So, for example, if in your DIBLS oral reading fluency, you see that children are not achieving a benchmark, that ORF is really a temperature gauge. And so then what you would want to do is you would want to have some of the reading interventionists go into a looking diagnostically at something like the FRI list. And that is a test of a pure word recognition test, whether children can identify those words in 1 second. And that might be done fall, winter, and spring, just for children in fourth grade who may not be achieving their screening benchmarks. Now, many schools that I visit, even in fourth grade, are still using the Fountas-Pinel benchmark kit. So I would like you to go ahead now and to practice yourself. The Fountas-Pinel benchmark kit is a kit which has some leveled grade level books. And it does go ahead and then have some, it asks children after they orally read a leveled text to do a retelling and to answer some questions. And this is typically done 3 times a year. So go ahead and practice completing our audit form for the Founis and Pinnell Benchmark Kit. Take a minute to do that. And you can signal when you're finished. Okay, so let's go to our next slide. And so the Founis and Pinnell Benchmark Kit can be used in many schools. It is used as a screening tool. And it's also an outcome tool for schools because, I mean, you should, if you're using that, you want to compare where your children are at the end of the year. Are they achieving the benchmark that is the established benchmark by the Founis and Pinnell system? And also, you know, it assesses all of these particular areas. It assesses word recognition because you are getting children to read orally and you are recording that oral reading. So it's giving you a word recognition accuracy. You, after level L, for most children in fourth grade, you would be timing it. So you have a reading fluency, word correct per minute score. You also have a comprehension score based on the retelling and questions and answers. And this typically would be administered fall, winter, and spring. And typically, teachers are doing an initial training on it. You may do boosters. And in fact, I would hope that you are doing both fidelity checks and boosters for that. Now, the next thing I'd like you to do is on your own to go ahead and complete something that your school district does and go ahead and take about 1 minute or 2 minutes to write in something that you do at your district that we have not practiced and have a chance to practice that. And then again, signal to me when you are finished your independent practice of something that you do in your district. And it might even be very interesting for the rest of us for you to jot into, to sign in on the chat and just share with us what, not your analysis, but what test you do that we, that you are actually practicing on your sheet. That might be interesting to me to find out what some of the other tests are that you do. And any questions that you have as you are going through the columns. Now, think carefully about that last column. Has your district only provided initial training? In what way do you have fidelity checks built into any assessment that you are giving so that you are confident that the assessments that are being administered are being scored and interpreted in reliable and valid ways and consistent ways from classroom to classroom? Yes, and Ames Web is very similar, I would say even more similar to Dibbles, because it is a CBM, whereas STAR is you know, typically one of those adaptive tests that has passages and children answering questions about it and has a series of multiple tests. NWEA, good, I'm glad you mentioned that one. That has become, yeah, that is one that many school districts do use. And again, I think for some of the same reasons, I think it is approved for APPR. I'd be very interested, are any of you, jot in if any of you are using any kind of informal reading inventory in these upper grades. I'd be very interested in knowing how you are getting a diagnostic portrait of your students' comprehension. What are you currently using? I'm very interested in that. So, I'd appreciate you chatting that in for us. Oh, FastBridge. Yes, we've heard some very positive responses to FastBridge, that many, because of that adaptive, you can either do with the FastBridge, they have both CBMs and adaptive comprehension tasks available. Any information that you can chat in is very useful, because as all of our districts begin this process, they are going to be exploring other alternatives. Laura, would you please chat in? Who administers the QRI in your district? Because the QRI is truly a gold standard for diagnostic comprehension evaluation, but very few people are skilled in administering it. It takes a very in-depth training to be competent in administering it, and it also takes time. So reading teachers and special education. I'm very happy to see special ed teachers administering, because I would think if you have any children in special education that have reading comprehension challenges, you really do, you know, it's almost essential that you would administer the QRI in special education. To get a detailed portrayal of a child's I think we can close that poll. Okay, so I'm very glad to see some people administering that QRI, because it does provide detailed information of the highest quality. Okay, so when you're thinking about your system and you're evaluating and looking at what assessments your teachers are using, the things that you want to be thinking about are, you know, how are children, you know, is what we're evaluating being done in reading, and what's the comparable test in writing? And looking at skills in isolation, and then looking at skills and how they're being used in connected text. So, for example, high-frequency words, how are children responding to those words, those high-frequency words in isolation? Can they identify them immediately? And how are they identifying them? Is that what they are tripping up over in connected text? Writing, doing something like a spelling inventory in isolation, and then looking at that those same kinds of skills in connected text. Often for comprehension, we also have to always be thinking about listening and speaking, because those two language arts are a crucial part of the picture of comprehension. Now, we're going to look over some assessments that would be likely to show up in each of the areas. And so I am going to review some of these assessments. Many of these are described more fully in the book Assessment for Reading Instruction, and even in the Assessment for Reading Instruction book, our third edition, there are many reproducibles for some of these tests, which I will indicate to you as we go along. But we're going to go through each construct. Now, many of these constructs, you know, or many of these tests that I'm going to mention, you may never have heard of these, and you may not currently have them on your assessment audit. But these are things that down the road you may want to refer back to if you are not happy with what you're currently using in a particular construct, or if you are discovering voids in particular constructs, you may want to refer back to these slides to see what some of the areas are where you can fill in those voids. Now, at this developmental level in grades 3 through 6, we would not expect classroom teachers to be doing phonological awareness tasks. However, these would be likely to be conducted by specialized experts for specific children. And so there's something like the CTOP. This is a norm standardized test, or TOPA 2+. These are by the Torgerson team. And these might be things that might be done either by the school psychologist or by the special ed teacher for children who are still having difficulties in this area that are related to the phonological processing and phonics. Word recognition. Now, here is an area I'm not sure many schools do not have the tower available and at their school. But this is a test that I think is definitely worth looking into in the upper grades, because so often children who have reading problems may be able to automatically call out those most common 300 Dolch words, or the 260 Dolch words, or the first 300 Fry words, but you're still seeing that they are still getting low scores and are not achieving benchmark on their oral reading fluency, their CBM oral reading fluency screener. And so you're trying to figure out what is it that is contributing, again, because that oral reading fluency test is really a temperature gauge. And in order to figure out why the child is chugging along at 40 words a minute, you need to figure out, is it the high frequency words that they are not able to identify automatically? Is it also their phonics skills? And how are these two interacting and contributing? The Tower 2 is a wonderful test that's normed, standardized, and works very well in third grade and above. And it's a 45-second phonological decoding and a 45-second high-frequency word test, and it can be normed to give you a percentile rank where you can compare those. So this is a wonderful, in-depth kind of diagnostic. I would say it's not a screener, because you don't want to use it with everybody, but you do want to use it for those children who are not performing, reaching the benchmark, to really see, get some more detailed information. Also, for CBMs, you can go to Intervention Central to create your own CBMs for high-frequency words. iReady provides information. I didn't notice anybody using iReady, but several schools that I'm working with are using iReady, and it does a kind of screening of high-frequency words. Of course, it's a multiple choice, so that's a lot different than just giving a child a Fry list and getting them to read it and having to score it in 1 second. But these are all tests that currently do provide this information in various ways. The decoding aspect of word recognition, some of the tests that do provide information about that, the Woodcock-Johnson may be used by school psychologists. The Tower 2, that's that phonemic decoding that I referenced back here. They have it's a nonsense word, 45-second nonsense word test that's normed, standardized, that gives you some good information. The CBMs for letter naming, sound fluency, nonsense word fluency. If you have some children in special ed that may still need that kind of CBM for progress monitoring. iReady, and certainly the developmental decoding inventories. If you have children who are having low scores on their oral reading fluency and you're trying to figure out, you really do need to do just a diagnostic decoding inventory to determine where that process is falling apart. And for children also you're detecting that have some difficulties, that also the MSV analysis of an oral, of a running record that may be part of the QRI or some other kind of informal reading inventory that does provide information to you about what's happening, about what is where the process is breaking down for children who are decoding. I think spelling development is a very powerful indicator that we're either the Words Their Way spelling inventory or the Word Journeys inventory provide information also that provide information in an isolated way. And I think it's one of the quickest, dirtiest measures that you can use to get a treasure trove of information about children. And I would heartily recommend, investigating that, because not that you're going to use, the Words Their Way spelling program, but it really does provide valuable insights about where children are along that developmental continuum of word awareness, how words work. There certainly is a CBM, a spelling developmental CBM that can be used, and also the Woodcock-Johnson provides information about it also. Reading fluency, we certainly have some prosodic scales that can be used, but in grades 3 through 6, I think that we're sort of beyond, unless a child is reading at, below mid first grade level, then we would still want to be using our words correct per minute as our dominant measure of fluency. So a CBM, I think, provides the quickest measure of that, and to give us a snapshot of where children, how children are performing. And it's also useful because we are using that same instrument for screening and certainly for progress monitoring. Now, vocabulary is an area that I suspect many of you in this investigation may find some voids in vocabulary. And so some of the vocabulary tests that, say, school psychologists may be likely to give the novice or the classroom teacher, and even reading specialists may be less likely to give and may not be recommended to give the Peabody picture vocabulary test, the expressive vocabulary test. But these are things very much that you may want to recruit your speech and language person to join in on the team, and that, this would be, for children who have comprehension problem, this is certainly a pathway that you need to investigate, in these grades 3 through 6. Also some common formative measures that look at how children are performing on reading comprehension around units that have been taught. So if you're doing a science or social studies or literary unit, how are children responding to those kinds of texts in ways that mimic our state ELA and in ways that they're actually applying vocabulary to demonstrate that they have acquired that social studies knowledge, that science knowledge, that disciplinary content knowledge. And there are some very good disciplinary unit vocabulary tests. Now, some schools say, we don't have anything for vocabulary, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to buy a vocabulary program. In my experience, there is plenty of vocabulary in your disciplinary units that it is unlikely that you need to go to an outside source. I think the first line of attack might be to really look at how we are teaching and testing the development of our vocabulary in our disciplinary units. That might be a first approach that you may want to look at as part of this assessment audit process. And I know some of you use some districts that are using basal readers are using some of that vocabulary, the vocabulary tests that are built into those. So these are all tests that you would be including and that different people would be including on their audit, from the school psychologist to the speech and language teacher to the classroom teacher and the English learner teacher as well, who must be a part of this process and what specialized instrument is she or he using? Now, here is the comprehension that is really that, you know, it is there. It's much more difficult to get some good assessments and single assessments of comprehension than it is for those foundational skills. Those of us who are working in grades 3 through 6, we are not able to use just one comprehension measure like maybe they can use in the primary grades for the foundational skills. So really for comprehension, we need to make sure that we are using multiple measures of comprehension. And so we, you know, at some point there has to be a retelling with an individual text scoring guide. The retelling can't just be, yes, this was a good retelling, or an excellent retelling, a satisfactory retelling, an inadequate. You know, that is not detailed enough because it's going to be too subjective. And so you're going to need to really discuss that in this discussion that you all have around the audit. Questions. There need to be, you know, there should be some way of assessing how children respond to questions that they are asked. And the questions need to be text-based and text-dependent. You want to look at whether the assessment that you're currently using in classrooms has specific questions for each test or for each passage. Like Laura mentioned the QRI. Well, the QRI has very specific questions that are text-dependent and have been field-tested with thousands and thousands of kids. If you are using something else like the F&P, you need to dig into your technical information. How many are all of these questions being asked the same by every single teacher, or is this too open-ended that it's not giving us the information that we need? This is the kind of conversation that needs to be happening around your comprehension assessments. The stakes are too high for comprehension to take this lightly and to not dig deeply into the technical information that your current assessments provide. Also, there need to be written responses to text because the two ways, we can't do an x-ray of what a child understands. So the two ways that you are going to know whether children are comprehending is through what they say and through what they write. And the writing cannot be looked at separately from comprehension. How they communicate their understanding in writing is very much a part of comprehension. Some of the other tests, some of you mentioned the adaptive tests, are really on the horizon and really are promising measures for us. And so during this process, you want to really look to the future. You want to be on the front of the, you know, at the front of the curve. And so be really investigating some of these adaptive tests and how you can use them to get as a screener an estimate. Because these written and verbal responses may need to be reserved for diagnostics. And so perhaps getting an adaptive test might be something you want to explore, because what you really want for children in ages grades 3 through 6 is the estimate. All right. You want to get in the ballpark of what their comprehension is, because it's going to vary by text and by setting. So you're not going to be able to get a pinpointed answer. And so an adaptive test that gives you a Lexile may be good enough for screening. And so these are part of your conversations that you want to have. And in terms of progress monitoring, you want to explore things like these for CBMs, your ORF, and your MAYS and DAYS. The other thing that you need to consider in grades 3 through 6 is there needs to be a way to evaluate students' process writing. I would say that there must be periodic common prompts with established rubrics for narrative writing products, exposition, and argumentation. And I think probably the most efficient way that you will find to do this is to embed them within your disciplinary units, your literary units, your science units, your social studies units. But by having teachers sit together in grade level teams as professional learning communities, as your PLCs, and evaluating them. However, this is something that may already be in place in your school, or it may not, and it may need to be. And in third through sixth grade, we cannot avoid the role of motivation and attitude. And there are assessments that can be fairly easily administered as well, and that particularly for children who are having reading difficulties, that we do want to employ. And so things like the Garfield Elementary Reading Attitude Survey work very well in third, fourth, and fifth grade. And these are normed. This is not just, we're not just picking a little smiley face here and having a warm and fuzzy assessment. This is a test that is an attitude survey that has been normed with children around the country. And so you can actually get a percentile by grade level and by gender. And again, this appears in our McKenna, both of these appear in our McKenna and Stahl assessment books. And we also, Mike McKenna and his colleagues at University of Virginia have also, when this can also be found in our book for any of you who are out there working with middle schools, this is a wonderful assessment, the Survey of Adolescent Reading Attitudes parses out with norms recreational reading in a print setting, recreational reading in digital settings, academic reading in print settings, and academic reading in digital settings, and children's attitude about reading in each of those settings. And this is something that really comes into play with children that we're working with that have had reading problems for 7 years. And so this attitude really becomes something that we need to incorporate into any intervention that we are developing. So those are some assessments that you may either currently have and be analyzing or may want to investigate in your future plan for developing a new updated assessment system. And this conversation around these tests must have all voices contribute. Those hidden tests that people are using behind closed doors must be brought into must be made visible and transparent. And so for better or worse, this discussions have to reveal what people use, and they have to be free to tell why they use them and why they're invested in not using what you administrators may have picked and why they're behind closed doors still doing the same old test they used to use. And then we also have school specialists. You know, I mentioned that who I always called the jewel of the school, the speech and language specialist. These folks, the speech and language specialist, the special ed teacher, that reading interventionist who has been around for 30 years, 35 years, these folks have very specialized tests for specific diagnostic purposes. We want to get those tests on paper and know that those are available for those people to use, but that not everybody should be doing those. But for children who are the hardest nuts to crack, those tests may be just the thing that provide the illumination on where that process is falling apart and provide the target for us to provide access to that child. And if we decide that data is important enough to collect, it needs to be important enough to share. There must be transparency. So often, these specialized faculty members are assessing skills that are then reassessed in classrooms simply because there's not the communication. And so we really need to be looking with technology, some new ways to share these assessment results in more transparent ways. Because the school realities are, we do not always have time to sit and chat about our kids. We barely have time to run to the restroom, okay? So And, you know, I have heard in many schools that I've visited, I hear specialists say, well, we gave the classroom teacher the data. It's in a binder. A lot of times I don't even know where the binder is, or I don't know where that piece of paper is in this pile that I'm looking at on the side of my desk. And so our goal really is to develop a streamlined assessment system that will also incorporate a streamlined data analysis system and communication system with our technology tools that are now available. So if we look at that, we really are at a very exciting time period that we can really be excited and have a positive outlook about updating our current assessment system to make it something much more modern and user-friendly for all. So now I'm going to share with you what some of the, you know, where you're headed now. So the first thing, the first step that we're wanting folks to do is to individually, each teacher in the district or at the school, first at the school level, each teacher will individually complete the audit form that is allocated for their grade level, all right? Once every individual in a grade level fills out the assessment audit form with all the assessments that they personally use, no matter how large or small, then there will be a grade level meeting to discuss the individual audits. The grade level team will compile a single grade level audit form that contains all the assessments used by that grade level. And the grade level team will also brainstorm ideas related to the obvious grade level redundancies and voids. Okay, so those last couple pages of the audit are where you list, oh, where are our redundancies? Where are our voids? What does that mean, redundancies? Well, what do grade level redundancies look like? Okay, one grade level redundancy is that the classroom teacher and interventionist are doing separate tests that are exactly the same. So, for example, they're doing separate high frequency word tests, maybe even different lists. Maybe one is doing a Dulch list and the other is doing a Fry list or some other list that they know of. All right, that's a redundancy because they're testing the exact same construct, the exact same way, but they're using a different list and recording it different ways, and the result is actually even different instructional outcomes and goals. Or here's one, and I didn't make these up. This is actually what I've observed in schools. All right, one teacher said, well, the district mandates the F&P benchmark kit, so I do that for the district record, but I like the specific questions on the old DRA, so I use that additionally for my own information. That's a lot of testing, okay? Good reasons. So those reasons need to be a part of the conversation because that should inform what single test you're going to select. Okay, or here's another one. The district mandates the Ames Web. However, I read the McKenna and Walpole differentiation book, and it mentions Dibble, so that must be better for differentiation. Okay, so these are all the kinds of reasons that teachers use, and so these are definitely redundancies. Children are being over-tested in these settings, and these need to be brought to the surface in a safe and secure environment. What do grade level voids look like? Well, the most obvious thing is when you look in that vocabulary column, that conceptual vocabulary, and there's nothing there, all right? Or the kids are retelling in response to the F&P benchmark text, but there's no scoring guide, and the questions are not specific to the text, nor is any of this administered consistently from teacher to teacher. If I went to, they could both be administering the exact same story. I sit down in one teacher's class, She asks different questions. She scores it differently than when I walk in the next teacher's classroom next door. They're reading the same story in an assessment setting, and the questions are totally different, and the retelling scored completely different. That's a void. We don't know what kids are comprehending in that setting. Or my students are not being systematically in how they respond to text and writing. There is nothing throughout the year other than test prep, getting kids to read a text and then respond to it in a way that is systematic. Those are voids. Here are some other major problems that are unique to grades 3 through 6 that this discussion needs to illuminate. And so I would say that when you are having your grade level plus your school-wide plus your district-wide discussion, these bulleted things need to be discussed and part of the conversation. All right. Is extensive time being devoted to any assessment that is not reliable, not valid, or not being correlated to your ELA test results? So, for example, if you are using your S&P benchmark kit, one of the things that you might want to do before you finish this audit process is look at the correlations maybe from the year 2015. Look at the correlations between the benchmark, end-of-year benchmarks that your kids had as their test scores, as their final test benchmark kit level, and their ELA test scores. Are they aligned? If not, then this may be something to really take a look at. Also, are the ELA test scores being misused to assign kids to intervention? In order to assign kids to intervention, you need diagnostic assessment. You can't just take that number from the ELA test and say, okay, kids in this numerical bracket go here and kids in this numerical bracket go there. Same thing with that item analysis. You can't group kids that way. The item analysis is one of the major misuses of professional development time, I would say, in our schools. It's well-intentioned, but a kid who, you know, often the passage is what dictates whether a child can administer, can do character analysis or not. It's not necessarily whether the kid can do character analysis or not do character analysis. If the passage is a complex passage, they may not be able to do it, but they can do it on an easier passage. So same standard, different text. We also are not going to be able to find a single silver bullet as a comprehension indicator. And finally, the lack of clarity and definition in using diagnostic tests to group kids in grades 3 through 6 for intervention. And so, you know, we do need diagnostics for that process, because in grades 3 through 6, we have children who may be showing up as having reading difficulties and having comprehension problems, but we need to parse out and intervene with either it's a purely comprehension problem or it's a problem that is really a word recognition problem that is causing kids to not be able to comprehend the passages. And so we need to, for those kids, they need intervention in phonics, fluency, and comprehension, all three. And so we need diagnostic tests that are going to identify who our kids are by what their needs are and who are the neediest kids. So after you have completed these grade level composites, then you will have school meetings. All right, and you might want to, at your school audit meeting, you will have a grade level representative attend a school meeting. And you may want to take a look at these, on the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center, our website. Go to each of the pilot schools, and they have some completed forms as examples. And these particular schools, Burton, George Mather Forbes, and Milton Fletcher, are some very comprehensive samples for you to look at in this process. So our next webinar is going to be on May 4th. And so, therefore, what I would hope that you would be doing between now and May 4th is engaging in these steps, the individual audit, the grade level audit, and your first or second school level audit, all right? So that's where, you know, you should be, that would be my homework that I would assign to you between now and May 4th. Because on May 4th, we're going to look at our assessment garden. All right. So once you get all of the, you know, you have all of the grade levels have contributed their individual audit, grade level audits, and you now have a big school spreadsheet, and you may have had one or two school conversations at this juncture. All right, what are we going to do? How do we prune all of this information that we have? How do we weed and get rid of what no longer is serving us? What do we need to plant that is new? How do we nurture these components to make them a healthy and efficient system that is still very, very lean, and that we have certain assessments that are serving multiple functions? And so on May 4th, we will actually talk about those steps, those final steps of the process after you have collected all your teacher and grade level data and have it at a school level that can then even be used at the district level for those who you choose to do a district wide. So now I'd like to open it up. That's a lot of information, but I'd like to open it up now for your comments and questions about you all carrying out this process. So, you know, chat in your questions and comments. We have about 15 minutes for your comments and questions. Let's see, our district used to have many more diagnostic assessments, many of which you mentioned today, however, no longer used. Barbara, I think maybe people got so overwhelmed with, you know, the Common Core and RTI. And so I think there was recently some of these diagnostic assessments may have fallen by the wayside. But I think now we are seeing how important they are, because it's particularly for Tier 3 and for special ed. We can't inform instruction that is really going to make a difference unless we know precisely where those children, the process is falling apart. And we have to think of, I always like to think of it as a bullseye. You know, if we're just using a standardized protocol, it's more like playing pin the tail on the donkey, where we're blindfolding and throwing a little of this and a little of that at kids that's programmatic. But if we really want to help those children who need the most help, we need to really pinpoint the skills. We can't just pin the tail on the donkey and hope we hit something. We have to really be very strategic in diagnosing precisely where the process is falling apart and engage in instruction. And so hopefully those diagnostic tests will become more prevalent, and that districts, and I think this has to happen at the district level. And, you know, I want to send a brag out to Williamsville School District and Orchard Park School District, which they conducted, each of them separately conducted week-long summer institutes for their special education teachers and their reading interventionists in diagnostic assessment processes for Tier 3 and special education. And I think we may need to be moving back to that because some of the teachers that I see coming out of college recently may not have had training in diagnostic assessments. And so they are certainly well-intentioned, and so this may fall on the district's shoulders to provide district-wide professional development in these diagnostic tools for the children who need the most in Tier 3 and special education. And even, I think, Barbara, I see you talking about doing a back test with DIBELS. You know, it worries me that when we do that back test, we're still spending additional instructional time that may be better spent in a more targeted diagnostic test that then will feed us direct information about how to instruct. I think the tie, at least for me personally in my reading clinic, I prefer to go directly rather than back testing in DIBELS. I prefer to go right to the diagnostic that's going to give me explicit information about what I need to instruct that can be fed right into an instructional model. And but if my beloved late husband used to say, if your only tool is a hammer, everything is a nail. And so if your only tool is CBM, then everything is done around a CBM framework. Other questions and comments about your process? Yes, I see a lot of the benchmarking and progress monitoring. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that, you know, certainly it is labor intense and it's specialized. And I think that's something we need to make clear to our administrators is that we do need specialized faculty to do some specialized tests that, you know, not everybody has to know how to do these tests. Classroom teachers do not need to know how to do these diagnostics. You know, I was thrilled to see that some people, you know, are still using the QRI because that really, I think that really, though, can only be done for Tier 3. I mean, I really cannot imagine that you could, you know, could or would do that as a universal screening. It's simply too time intensive, and it's also, even if you just use the grade level sample, I think that most teachers really are not going to be able to do it with the kind of expertise needed for the QRI.
Okay, and while we're waiting to see, it looks like Laura has a comment question, but I'm going to post the evaluation, but no rush. Keep those questions, comments.
Okay, and so Laura is just clarifying for us that, yes, they weren't really using it as a universal screener, but they were using it already identified by other screeners, but they were using it really just to plan Tier 3 interventions, which I think is really probably the best way to use that. So, Molly, thank you, and thanks to all of you for attending this, and I look forward to your feedback and to see what you come up with on May 4th in this assessment audit process. That'll be very exciting for us to share, and I'm hoping to have some of the people from Orchard Park to share with us their experience in the audit process as well. So, please do complete the Survey Monkey, the survey, the evaluation. You know, it just takes a few minutes, and that feedback is so helpful for us. And thank you so much for attending our webinar. And I look forward to seeing you on May 4th.
Yes, thank you, everyone, and thank you, Dr. Stahl. And Dr. Stahl, if you could just hang out for a minute, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
Thank you.